Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, it's time for us to go ahead and jump into our season prediction. So happy to wrap up the preview, the positional preview that we did. I thought that went as well as it's gone in the past as far as just a consistent quality. Didn't have too many audio hiccups. Cheers for everybody involved in that. And with that, let's turn our conversation to what we expect from the season in general. Happy to be able to work with Louisiana Hot Sauce for a second season. Three simple ingredients, one fantastic product, and one very easy avenue to improve damn near every meal that you put on your table or put on your desk at lunch or any other time. So please keep them in mind. But Bud, let's jump into this. Look, be honest with the listener. Never are our podcasts particularly scripted. We always have a couple notes down that we want to touch on, but we've never really done any kind of planning on these season previews. Really, we just press record, start talking, and want to have as organic of a back and forth. So how we feel about various position groups or how the schedule lays out or whatever it may be that comes out of the next 40 minutes to an hour of talk. So excited to have these. No real structure at all, but let's just jump into it, Bud, and see where our thoughts take us as to what 2017 might ultimately look like.
And angered listeners know that's the truth, because sometimes we will put a list of players who we intend to talk about, and we will forget to list some players if they're not actually any good or if they're just not in the plans because they're going to be redshirting. Did we talk about Malik Jackson at the receiver position? Don't know if we actually brought him up. I know he changed over from corner, but for the most part, we hit on all the players you need to know. So that'll be, I feel like, the truth still. Let's start positively here, man. What do you feel like are the biggest strengths of this team? If this schedule is just a murderer's row. I mean, it's by far the toughest schedule Jimbo Fisher's ever faced. It's either the first or second toughest schedule in the country, depending on what your thoughts are on Auburn's schedule. What strength of this team, to you, give you the hope and the confidence that this could be a playoff team?
I think, the amount of elite defensive talent. Now, look, everybody's going to jump on you when you don't include, or when you even choose to include 2013 in the conversation. But this roster, when you look at the defensive talent and how many elite guys that have the chance to be as good as anybody in their position, it reminds me of looking at like a roster from 1997 or something. I mean, you've got one of the better defensive tackles in the country. If Thomas is good to go, you've got a linebacker that's as good as anybody in the conference, and you have maybe two of the better players at their position in all of college football, maybe one of the more dominant players in college football in Derwin James on your defense. So I think you've got an incredible defensive tackle. You've got some defensive ends that are poised to have a big year. You're solid at linebacker, and you have some incredibly special pieces in the secondary. So the first thing that jumps out at me is that you are able to play defense with anybody in the country, and you've got a roster that's as stacked as anybody has on that particular side of the ball. And when you talk about the DNA of programs and what it means and what it needs to be to play at the highest level for Florida State, that's having a defense that can play with anybody and maybe be better than anybody. And I feel like on defense, they're able to play with anybody in the country, and historically, when that's been the case, Florida State's been pretty damn good.
Josh Sweat, going to get drafted. Brian Burns, going to get drafted. Derek Nnadi, going to get drafted. DeMarcus Christmas, I think, will get drafted. Jacob Pugh, legitimate shot to get drafted. Roderick Hoskins, we'll see. Matthew Thomas, if he's eligible, is going to get drafted. Derwin James might go in the top 10 picks of the entire draft. I think it's fairly safe to say he's going to get drafted. Tavares McFadden is absolutely getting drafted. On the other side, I think Levante Taylor, with his athleticism, suggests he would get drafted. Now, that's 2 years away. Obviously, he hasn't started the game yet. I've already said on the record, I think Stanford Samuels is going to be a three-and-done guy and get drafted. Trey Marshall, because of his athleticism and the way he plays the game, could have a chance to make an NFL roster. Hell, he may get drafted. I mean, I think he's a guy who will test very well. Mm-hmm. If you recall back at the opening, the 2013 opening, because he was class of 14, right? I think. Because he was a true freshman and he was contributing in the Georgia Tech championship game. He was the fastest man at the opening. I think, or at least one of the finalists. Definitely the fastest in his heat. Good chance to get drafted. I just said the word drafted a whole lot of times, man. And I'm sure I left somebody out, but there's a bunch of future pro talent on this defense. And there are no excuses not to play really, really well. Now, I'm glad you said the word talent and not just the defense, because there's a little bit of a question there. Will Charles Kelly coach these guys up? Is this defensive staff good enough? You know, I saw Bruce Feldman put out a list of like 30 most coveted coaches who are like coordinators and position coaches, and I didn't see a single FSU coach on there. That could say something about the staff. I don't know. Maybe the benefit of continuity outweighs the potential lack of firepower on the staff. We'll see. I happen to think that they're going to come out and they're going to coach well and they're going to have a good year. But it is worth noting, they didn't stop anybody last year who had a mobile quarterback and an up-tempo offense. What they did was stopped playing those teams, right? I mean, they basically, that defense, quote-unquote, got better at the same time as they stopped playing a bunch of elite offenses. But Ingram, when you think about it, man, this year, what really elite offenses do you play? Bama's not pretty, but it's elite. The way they score is absolutely elite. So there's one. We assume Louisville again, probably.
I was going to say, when you have that offensive mind and that kid a quarterback, you've got to give them the benefit of the doubt that offense is going to be elite.
Clemson's got a lot of talent. Maybe them. But other than that, man, I got to tell you, I don't think the offenses they play this year are all that good. I think Florida State's defense is going to shut down the vast majority of opposing offenses they play, and that's going to keep them in almost every single game, in my opinion. And I agree with you. I think that is the number one reason to really like this team, especially having Derwin back. He's a leader, too. You know, he's not just an elite player. He's a guy that other players on the team respect. He would get on other dudes. We talk about the offense not really having verbal leaders, you know, who are actually also good players, right? You got some guys who like to talk but maybe aren't that good at football. And you got some guys who are good at football who maybe don't talk at all. On defense, that's not the case. Your best player is also your most verbal. And that's Derwin James.
I think that's a fair look at the first thing that jumps out at you. Second one, Bud, is going to be a little bit more of, I don't know that we'll be able to get quite as much of a like a firm grasp on it. It's more of kind of a theory. It's more of a, I don't know if theory is the exact right word because we've seen it play out in the past. But I think a Jimbo Fisher that's challenged is the best version of Jimbo that you possibly see. If you think about some of the things that he did from an offensive standpoint in the first years of his coaching when the defense was less than desirable, it's some of the more creative and some of the more ingenious offensive sets and offensive gameplay that you've seen. And I think that having Alabama as game one and having the real idea that you could be embarrassed may very well bring out the best possible Jimbo that you have as far as being creative and maybe being able to break some, not all, but maybe being able to break away from some of the traditional bindings that has kind of influenced the way that Florida State has played or at times chosen not to play.
Do you mean maybe going a little more college in his pro-style offense?
A little more of the modern collegiate approach. That's exactly what I mean.
I think I agree with you there. I think that's an excellent point. And it, particularly because of who you open with, I think that has made Jimbo really, I don't want to say do some soul-searching, but really evaluate how you run this offense. Because, Ingram, and we're going to save a lot of this for the Bama preview because the season is not the Bama game. The season is 12 games. Who was the last pro-style team to take down Alabama?
Good question.
It's LSU in 2011.
You're right. It's a field goal fest.
They won 9-6.
Exactly.
9-6. They didn't score a touchdown. I think before that, the last pro-style team to beat them was South Carolina in 2010, the Steve Spurrier, Alshon Jeffrey team. Mm-hmm. That's 7 seasons ago. That's tough. So I do think, now, look, If they make some changes, if they evaluate how they run the offense, if they take advantage of the college rules some, if they more closely fit what they do to their quarterback skill set. And DeAndre Francois is a good runner. right? And he's got a hell of an arm. He's just not super accurate all the time, and he's not always the quickest to read defenses, and that's okay. You can give me that skill set, and I can win a boatload of ball games in college football. In fact, I can win a national championship like that in college football if I'm an elite coach and I have elite talent around him. We've seen that. There's no doubt. I think that Jimbo Fisher is going to do a better job of fitting his scheme to his offensive talent this year. And by the way, this is kind of my point 2.5. I love the offensive skill talent they have. You tell me I get two veteran tight ends in Ryan Izzo and Maven Saunders, fourth-year juniors. I get those guys. I get Trey McKitty, who's wowed some people as a third tight end, you know, passing up Nasir Upshur. I get some dudes who I'm pretty sure we think are going to be in the NFL, in Keith Gavin, who has zero career catches, and I understand the rest of the nation not loving him. And I get Nyquan Murray, who's a big-time playmaker, even if he is considerably frustrating to the coaches. And I get Auden Tate, a guy who's a big target, who catches the ball pretty well. Man, I'm liking that. Now, I don't like the depth there. That scares me a little bit, but the top-level playmaking talent there is light years ahead of where it was last year. And then you got a backfield that is more equipped than anybody in the nation, I have to believe, except for maybe the guys in Tuscaloosa, to replace a dude named Dalvin Cook. You give me Patrick, who's running hard, showed up to camp in great shape. You give me Rasul, who's finally healthy, knock on wood, and is really wowing. And you know, I heard he ripped off a huge touchdown run against the number one defense in the scrimmage, by the way. The most recent scrimmage there. So just a little intel for you. And then Cam Akers, who is still showing flashes and has had some freshman moments, but yeah, Cam Akers was arguably the number one back in the country. I just mentioned him third. I like that a lot. And I tell you what, I like the offensive line's depth more than I did last year, or more than I did the year before, I believe, too. Now, as we talked in the O-line episode, I really love the guards. We think Eberle's going to be better now that he had the double hip surgery and is in less pain. I'm not going to say no pain because I think he's still in some pain. And the tackles, we'll see. I like this team, man. I do. I think this has a chance to be... I think this team could have a chance to be Jimbo Fisher's second-best team. Personally.
I think that's part of the challenge, and we're not going to jump into predicting records here quite yet. We'll certainly get into that as we get into the podcast. But I think the part of this year is going to be judging the team and the job that the coaching staff has done, and have that be kind of balanced out by what your record is. You have to, if you're a Florida State fan, and we just ran a poll, and maybe not exactly the best indication that the fan base has a full appreciation for what this schedule is, but certainly it's there. I mean, some of the feedback, maybe not so much in the polling itself, but some of the replies indicate that people at least have a general appreciation for the challenge that this schedule presents, and that the record may not be there per se, but this really could be one of the better iterations of Florida State football under Jimbo Fisher.
It really could be. I mean, the amount of talent they have now, if they stay healthy, of course, is going to be a big-time thing. That 2013 team, I'll tell you right now, this team has better depth than 2013 had. 2013 had better frontline starters, I believe. And I think 2013 was considerably better, especially because they had a much better quarterback, mm-hmm. right? Like, nobody thinks DeAndre Francois is going to go in the first round. Nobody watched him, I don't think. FSU had the guy that went 1-1, so that's... You know, a big difference there. But I think you hit it on the head, man. My number one worry about this team is not any of the guys in that locker room. It's schedule. This is by far the toughest schedule they've faced under Jimbo Fisher, and I don't think it's really close. You play, what, the number one team in the country by all accounts entering the preseason in Alabama. You play the defending national champion in Clemson at their house, by the way.
Right.
Could have the best defense in the country, probably will have the best defensive line in the country. One of the only teams that has two or three guys on the defensive line who are better than the guys you have in Tallahassee. And that's saying something. You have Miami, which has a hell of a defense, an offense that at all positions but quarterback should be improved. You got NC State, which again should play really good defense as a veteran quarterback and is in a major kind of ambush spot there. You know,
very much so. Yeah,
like they're coming to Tallahassee right after Florida State has to play that Miami game. And I guarantee you, I tell you right now, if you're a Sporting guy, take NC State in that game. Not to win, but with whatever points FSU's laying. Just blindly take it if you can get it. Because there's no way Florida State will match the motivation to play NC State that NC State will bring in. It's just not natural to get up to play a non-name program that you are not going to naturally regard as being that good. But they're damn sure going to regard FSU as being that good. They're going to come into Tallahassee jacked up out of their minds. That's an ambush spot. That's a game that Florida State could lose. Now, I don't think we're going to predict them to lose that, but still, that's not easy. You got to go to Clemson, like I said. Ingram, we haven't even mentioned Louisville yet,
dude. We haven't mentioned Louisville. Now, I'll just mention you do have to go to Clemson, and maybe more importantly, when you have to go to Clemson. And I don't mean so much as the weather. Look, upstate South Carolina, November 11th isn't going to be any kind of major shock, but all of the things that you immediately speak of, other than the inability to clone their quarterback, man, Clemson's going to have a lot of time to get right and to get some of these freshmen and sophomores that they have playing at a high level. Man, if there were any year that you were going to be able to fall into kind of the traditional spot that the ACC used to give you, Clemson, give me Clemson in week three this year. Give me Clemson as soon as possible. The idea that Clemson doesn't come until November 11th, the third-to-last regular season spot on your schedule, that to me is a large advantage for Clemson in the fact that they get a chance to get a lot of these younger, more talented kids ready for the game that at least traditionally, and traditionally I mean in the last 5 years or so, has been more or less a de facto conference championship game.
I completely agree with you there, and I'm glad you mentioned the timing of that game. Now, I guess the one counter to that I would have is that Clemson does draw NC State the week before. Florida State gets Syracuse the week before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Syracuse is at home, too. You're not traveling to New York and then coming back and going to South Carolina. So that's a good point, and everybody knows what NC State should have done last year with Clemson. So that'll be a motivated team going to play Clemson, and that's a very worthwhile point that they're going to have to play two consecutive weeks at a fairly high level.
And then, look, you still got to go to the Swamp. Now, Florida State is undefeated in the Swamp under Jimbo Fisher, but let's be real here. Those really haven't been pretty wins, right? And I'll take an ugly win over a pretty loss any day, as they say. But at the same time, man, come on. It's not an easy place to win. Florida should be a lot better on offense, I think. We'll have to see how their defense goes. I don't think they have quite as much defensive talent as they've had in the past, and I definitely know they don't have quite as much defensive depth as they've had, so they might be worn down by that point in the year. But, man, who knows? That's not an easy game. It's not like Florida State's going to go in there being favored by double digits. They'll probably be less than a touchdown favorite in the Swamp, as they should be. That's never an easy place to play. That's a hell of a schedule, man. And then you got to go face that. Yeah, the quarterbacks you're facing this year are not as good, right? Deshaun Watson's gone. Mitch Trubisky's gone. You don't face Quentin Flowers this year, who was pretty good. Brad Kaya is gone. You don't face any Chad Kelly this year. And look, Chad Kelly, when he was healthy, was really damn good. I think your defensive numbers this year are going to look a lot better, but damn if the defenses you face aren't great, man. I know we talked about this in the offensive line preview and how we think fans are just going to all think the offensive line is garbage after the first month, and I'm going to stand by that. Fans are going to think that, and I'm going to tell you, you throw out any offensive line in the country out there, they're going to look bad against Florida State's September schedule. The question is, can Florida State's offensive line hold up enough to survive September with one or zero losses? Because if they do, I believe they're still very firmly in the playoff hunt. The offensive line is one of my main concerns about this team.
Yeah, it's one of the main concerns that we share, and that was a solid job of segueing from one to the other there. But, man, there's just too many questions or to phrase it better, there's a lack of unknown at almost every position at offense line. You got a kid here that you change positions with, yet to completely make a position his own. You got another slot over here where a kid has a little bit of injury concern, another slot where a kid's coming back from an injury. They're just pretty much at every place you can find a place to not have full confidence in what's going on with the offensive line. Now, on the whole, I think the first wave of players is at a place where you would think you'd be able to get a serviceable performance and be able to weather the storm that is the first three of the first teams you face, particularly three out of the first defensive line units that you face. But if you want to look at this team and you want to be real excited about the roster and you want to talk about the how excited we are about the defense, it's hard to not then look at the offense and look at the offensive line in particular and find a real legitimate reason to maybe pull back some of your own internal expectations for what this team can do.
Yeah, I think so. And look, my concern is really the tackles, the starters at tackle, right, with Derek Kelly being your left tackle, which is an unknown for me because he was very promising as a recruit and then as a freshman, got hurt, didn't really play much last year, you know, didn't play effectively when he was healthy. Now, maybe he's been a lot better, or maybe he's just the best option they have there, and the other guys didn't improve quite as much as they wanted them to. I think there's maybe some of both there. But look, there's no doubt that Rick Trickett is squarely in the spotlight this year, first offensive line coach. They've got to have a better year than they did last year. They didn't play very well. Now, part of that was quarterback holding the ball forever and a day, but also part of that was on them. They've got to be better mentally. And I think they will be better mentally this year, by the way. I think they will have fewer, like, WTF, nobody blocked that guy, right? Now,
right.
They're going to get beat sometimes because of how many elite defensive lines they play. And I think Florida State's going to play a lot of games in the 20s, personally. I think this is going to be an ugly, like, style of football to watch because of how much elite defensive talent you are playing on this schedule. It's just going to be that way. Remember how, like, when we have these incompetent SEC West offenses and everybody would tell us how good the SEC defenses are?
Yes.
I feel like that is what some of these games are going to look like, except it's not going to be a competent offense. It's going to be legitimately excellent defense that FSU is facing.
There's a ton of that to go around the conference, and I'm not trying to be a hater to this unit, or you mentioned you have some questions here and there. Man, I have a question about the only qualifier I'll put on this is if Landon Dickerson is healthy, label me as fully confident in that kid as possible. Every other position on this offensive line, I have some very, what I would classify very legitimate concerns or very legitimate reasons to have some real concern as to if it goes south, if a player gets injured or even if a player doesn't make the leap that we hope he does. So there's question marks that you can put at every place on this line with the exception of Dickerson playing guard.
I think I somewhat agree with you. I don't have a whole lot of questions about Rick Leonard at right tackle. I feel like he played better last year down the stretch and against some good teams as well. And I think he's put on some good weight, and I have every reason to believe he's going to play fairly well. Now, I don't know if he's going to be a superstar, but I think he'll be a good player. If Minshew's healthy, I think he's going to be good.
If Minshew's healthy, he's fine. But
the questions about him are health. I think, like, first and foremost and second as well. Dickerson, I totally agree. I think he'll be a star. Left tackle, I don't know. I like your tackle depth more than I like your guard depth, I feel like, right? Like, I think they thought they were going to have Josh Ball as their starter at left tackle coming out of spring, and now he's your third. So that's not a bad guy to have as a swing. They could also have Rubel there, but I do think your guard and center depth now is not really where you want it to be. In fact, we know that Landon Dickerson and Cole Minshew were both taking snap reps the other day as emergency centers because they had Boselli out, and obviously Bavion Johnson is already out as well. So I know we're probably running a little bit long on the O-line talk, but whatever. I know people like a lot of offensive line talk. From a unit that we had questions about the starters, I have some questions about the depth at another offensive position, Agar.
Yeah,
and I think you might as well.
Certainly, and man, the three starters we talked about, the wide receiver preview, we love what these guys can do. We love the idea of what Keith Gavin could be, a guy that, in my opinion, is a 10-year NFL player if health and things off the field are on his side. That's a guy that will be collecting a pension at some point in time. Auden Tate, I think, has a chance to have as good of a statistical performance as any wide receiver on this roster. And I mentioned this, if you're playing college fantasy football, Not a major source of a hobby for a lot of people, but if you are, Auden Tate is, in my opinion, one of the best values that you can find. Nyquan Murray, if he puts it together, or at least, or if he keeps it, you know, keeps it within the lines, is going to very much be poised to have a major breakout year, and a guy that Florida State has hoped will bring the consistency that allows him to do that. But damn, if there is not a pretty significant precipitous drop off from 3 to 4, and we're not even saying that because a walk-on necessarily occupies the number 4 spot. If we're not going to talk a whole lot about him because we'd love to see him give us a little more production before we start to talk, but George Campbell, even if George Campbell was currently listed as your 4th right now, bud, you'd be talking about 3 guys that we think are poised for major years, possibly breakout years, and then another kid that hasn't caught a ball since the opener of the 2015 season. So that's a little bit of perspective as to what you have at your first 3, and then who knows what really exists from that point on.
I completely agree with you. That's I think you nailed it, right? I mean, they moved Malik Jackson over from corner to receiver.
That's actually a kid that may be a little bit of more positive chatter than we realize. So maybe that's a kid that we didn't talk enough about. Jackson, I'm not saying he's going to be your 4th or press anybody for starter's role, but maybe that's a guy who has a chance to emerge and consume a few more snaps or be involved in more plays than we would have thought. But that doesn't necessarily change our concern with what exists outside of the first 3.
That's true, but he's still a guy you're moving in his senior season who hasn't played any receiver for you previously because of how scared you are about depth.
Yeah, but he's got a great nickname, and that will allow you to Bones. Overcome a lot of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see if Bones Jackson emerges. We'll see if George Campbell takes the reins and turns into the player that everybody hopes he can. But, wide receivers. If any of those 3 guys go down, you could be in a real situation that you didn't want to find yourself. So hopefully that's a decent balance of what makes us incredibly optimistic and what gives us real kind of cause for concern or pause when we start to be kind of overcome with some of the better ideas as to what this season could turn out as.
By the way, phone call I had there. We shot the linebacker preview earlier tonight, Ingram, and we said Adonis Thomas had been running, as Emmett Rice's backup there. Actually had a different source tell me that Thomas has been playing a little better and may be in line to get more reps than we thought if Matthew Thomas doesn't end up coming back at the linebacker position. That's potentially encouraging. He certainly has more size than Emmett Rice at that Will linebacker spot.
That's a good thing to hear, and that's frequently if you don't immediately hear from a JUCO or they don't pop out at a practice report, I think people tend to not necessarily lose interest in him, but maybe write him off prematurely. Thomas is a big physical kid, a guy that we've talked about a decent amount since his commitment from JUCO. But, man, if that guy's in a place to give you real meaningful snaps, then you have to feel all the better about what the defense could be and what the linebacker position may end up being. But let's take this kind of two different views of what the great strengths are and also what gives us concern or what some of the bigger worry points may be. Ultimately, how good do you think this team's going to be? What do you think the end product ends up looking like?
I think this team is going to be one of the 5 best teams in the country and maybe one of the 3 best, man. I think this team has legitimate national title potential. As far as like, could this be the best team in the country? Yeah, I think it could end up being the best team in the country. I look at it, but there's just not a whole lot of teams who I believe have similar level talent. You got clearly Alabama and Ohio State, but I think Florida State's a better team than Oklahoma. I think they're a better team than, I don't know, who else is getting a lot of hype. I got to pull up the preseason top 10, I guess. I think they're a better team than USC. I think they're a better team than Clemson. I mean, I don't know if it's by a big margin, but I think they are. Penn State, certainly. I don't think Penn State has almost anybody who could start on FSU's defense. Washington, again, they're a nice Pac-12 story. Wisconsin, please. Oklahoma State, again, with the defense, I just don't know. I think this team is going to be one of the 5 best teams in the country, and that's, I think, pretty high praise.
It absolutely is. It's reflective of the roster that's been built. It's reflective of the various pieces that have decided to go ahead and play their ball college football in Tallahassee. And it's reflective of the program that Jimbo Fisher's built. I mean, we've given Jimbo a decent amount of grief over the period of time while he's been here. We've also been a pretty large proponent of the program that he's built, and the roster is very much reflective of that. We started this conversation by just kind of glowing over the defensive talent that's been assembled. You certainly have some pretty special pieces on the offensive side of the ball. I have no problem saying this is one of the four best rosters in college football. Now, is the record necessarily going to be reflective of that? It's something we mentioned at the beginning, and maybe it's more appropriate time for us to really look at what, in our opinion, that might ultimately end up looking like.
Yeah, so I know that the Vegas over-under for wins in a regular season is 9.5, right, with a slight shade to the over. But, man, 9.5 is – you don't see a whole lot of national title contenders with 9.5. And I think – or national title caliber contenders, you know, with the 9.5. And I don't think that's a reflection on the caliber of FSU. I think that's a reflection solely on the difficulty of the schedule. You also don't see teams win the national title when they have a schedule as tough as FSU's. Now, part of that is because they don't get to play themselves, right? And generally, you know, if you don't get to play the number one team in the country, it can be hard to have the top schedule. But the other part of that is just the difficulty of doing that and having potentially multiple losses and still winning a title. This is Florida State's going to get so much money from this game against Alabama. But let's not kid yourselves here that you're more likely to lose that game than you are to win it. So, in effect, you're scheduling yourself a likely loss, which hurts your playoff chances. Now, it's not the worst loss in the world to have if it happens. But that's going to impact their record, potentially. They could also win the game. I'm not going to totally rule that possibility out. This schedule is brutal. You know, I asked Bill Connolly, I said, hey, you know, how many wins do you think Florida State would have against, do you think Alabama would have against Florida State's schedule? Because I was just kind of curious. Hey, like, what do you think? Because he puts out his win projections, you know, as far as from his computer, Bill Connolly, my colleague at SB Nation. And I asked him, I said, what do you think? And he said, so Alabama, he has them at 10.7 against their schedule, right? What if Alabama played Florida State's schedule? He thinks it would be like 10.4. So you're talking about a third of a win lopped off, which in win predictions, that's a pretty big deal. Now, for perspective against Florida State against Florida State schedule, he has him at 9.5. What he's saying here is there's a really good chance that Alabama could be projected to go like 10-2 against FSU schedule. This is a brutal schedule because there are six games where you could very legitimately lose, and you won't be that big favorites if you're favored at all in them. I think we listed them out, but just again for the readers, Alabama, Miami, NC State, Louisville, Clemson, and Florida. The other six, I think, are probably gimmies. So that kind of helps us establish our floor in projecting these teams.
But it's always a pleasure to be able to talk about our friends at Madison Social and for the Table Restaurant Group as a whole. I want to clear up something from earlier in the summer. I mentioned that Matt and myself were kind of actively looking for places to have a pregame kind of party or organized get-together. That, unfortunately, is not going to be possible. We just ran into some logistical issues with state licensing. We ran into some interesting various prices that were listed, both above and below the table by the various groups that owned and operated land around the building. So we'll certainly have something in the future. We've already started having discussions about some other games that we may be able to do an organized event, but just want to clear up that there won't be anything for this game. Do want to point out that a significant amount of people evidently have decided that for them, Madison Social in particular is kind of their second home or even their second doke. So a lot of people from around the state are making their way to Tallahassee instead of or rather in lieu of Atlanta. And just want to remind you, if you're not going to be able to make your way up to my humble little city here and watch Florida State play Alabama, that Madison Social and really all of the restaurants for the Table Restaurant Group, but particularly Madison Social, is as good of a venue as you can hope to have.
And you know they're going to do that thing right and just absolutely blow it up. That's going to be That's going to be awesome. I know we'll talk about which beers they have on tap during the Bama preview, and also what their plans are for game day this season. It's a great place to tailgate at and to really kind of pre-tailgate, especially early in the year when it's just so hot. Mm-hmm. You know, like, do you really need 6-7 hours to tailgate out in the heat? No, maybe you can go to Matzo first. You know, have a couple beers there, get your day started right, and then that way you're not overheating for those games. So. They're a great sponsor, and Matt and those folks are great to work with, and we're so excited that to have another season brought to you by, you know, Madison Social, Central, and Township, and we might have them on the show to discuss things too. So I think what we should do here is, and we both agree this will be a top five caliber team, one of the best five in the country. I want to make sure we're emphasizing the word best there, because top implies kind of a poll, you know. And best implies quality. I think this will be one of the best five teams. I don't know if it'll finish in the top five. We're going to have to see. Give me your most likely record for Florida State, starting with your first.
I think 10-2 is more likely than anything else, and I have to struggle with that a little bit. But I think that, you know, ultimately, it wouldn't shock me to see Florida State lose to Alabama and then maybe lose the Louisville game. It's just something that when I look at that schedule, that's something that comes to mind. I think you have to realize that if you're a Florida State fan, and if this team somehow manages to go to 11-1, you've just viewed the best coaching performance probably since like the 1980s. And that sounds absurd. I think that's probably accurate. You have to have an appreciation for the schedule, and you have to have an appreciation for what is ultimately accomplished and being able to weigh that. And I'll tell you, 10-2 is not 11-1, obviously, but 10-2 is a hell of a job by this staff, and something that I would feel fully confident in labeling as a success on the year.
I think I'm right there with you on 10-2 being the most likely. That means you're going 4-2 against that schedule. Or against those six teams that we put out there. That's really what I would expect a, you know, super elite team to do. 4-2 seems fairly likely there, at least relative to other things. Now, what do you have as your second most likely record? I think this will be interesting.
Yeah, so I may not befriend myself to everybody in the fan base here, but I think 9-3 is more likely than 11-1. I think 9-3 may be more, I don't know if I want to say significantly more likely, but I jumped to that record a lot quicker than I jumped to the 11-1.
See, this is the tough part for me, because, you know, if you're picking Bama to win, then you're basically you're throwing in, you know, 0.0, right, in your projections. But if you're doing the probability of it, then you're giving FSU like probably what a 0.35 or mm-hmm. somewhere around there. Which really does skew it. And since we're doing season-long projections, I'm going to go with the projection there, because I don't think they have zero chance to win. And I actually think 11-1 is – I think 11-1, there's a legitimate chance, legitimate argument to be made that it can be more likely than 9-3 for a couple reasons. One, you know, Miami, not totally sure about their quarterback situation. They're playing in Doak. NC State is a real tough game. Can you find a way to pull that out? You know, can you find a way to beat Louisville at home? I think so. I mean, you get some fairly nice games before the Louisville game. You get a decent little setup before you go to Clemson, because I think you have to play Boston College and then Syracuse back to back beforehand. So that you get a nice little regroup there. I don't know what Florida's going to be by the end of the year. They're competing arguments. They could be totally gelled on offense and have stayed healthy on defense, or they could be, you know, maybe not quite as improved on offense as people thought, and then their defense had some injuries and they got exposed depth-wise, and that game's not quite as tough as you think, or somewhere in the middle. I think 11-1 is slightly more likely than 9-3. I know Bill Connolly has 9-3 as 28%, and 11-1 is 17%. So he thinks 9-3 is significantly more likely than 11-1, but I don't. I think 11-1 is maybe even slightly more likely than 9-3. What do you have for your third, by the way?
Third, I had 11-1.
Okay. I wanted to make sure you weren't going 8-4 or something.
No. I mean, I have concerns about various units, but I don't have four loss concerns. And, man, I really hope we're not Yeah, I had 10-2, 9-3, and 11-1 in that order of my as far as what I saw final record being.
Now, an interesting thing here, man. I got to tell you, we might be talking about, hey, should a 10-2 ACC champion be making the playoffs? Or, excuse me, 11-2, because if they're ACC title or ACC champs, they would have won the ACC championship game.
Right, and I think you do in this case. As long as you don't lose to a, you know, look, this is kind of self-explanatory, but as long as you don't lose to the team that ultimately ends up taking the conference, I think that a 10-2 Florida State then turned into an 11-2 conference champion with a loss to Alabama being one of those two, I think you're not guaranteed, and obviously there's other things going on in the conferences that you have no control over that could lead to maybe some Pac-10 team being undefeated or something like that. But I think you get the benefit of the doubt, and I think an 11-2 Florida State team with the schedule is, I don't want to say certain, but is certainly far more likely to make it than not.
I think you're dead on there. The question for me is going to be, if there happens to be a situation where you have, like, can ACC get two teams in? You know what I mean? Is there a possibility that Florida State is the second ACC team in? I think that's also possible, man. There's a lot of different ways this team could reach the playoff. And if ever we're going to see the ACC schedule, or rather the college ball committee's, like, schedule strength mandate being tested, which, again, I think it's largely BS. They still rank teams based on record, but man, there's going to be some hollering this year if Florida State against this schedule is behind some teams that played, you know, not that good competition, yeah, but who have one fewer loss.
Well, I don't ever want to hear about another quality loss if Florida State doesn't get the benefit of the doubt for scheduling Alabama. Obviously, assuming they don't lose to Alabama. And look, in an 11-1 Florida State team that's not the ACC champion, I would think would almost have to be in, because that means that they beat Alabama on a neutral field. Not only did they schedule the game, they won the game. And that, I'm almost more confident. In fact, I am more confident about a non-ACC champion with one loss, Florida State making it, as opposed to a two-loss potential conference champion.
It's going to be interesting to watch, man.
It also means another team had a hell of a year in the conference, whether that's Clemson, Louisville, whoever it may be, but somebody else would have had to have performed at a exceptionally high level for them to be the conference champion and for you to not be with but one loss within the conference.
I just don't know what's going to happen with these other leagues. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is where it gets into – this is almost where it's tough to do it, like, in podcast form. You almost need to do it on a website where you're showing stuff with tables. But I think you're right that the ACC is going to get that respect and that it's actually going to be possible for them to do it. At the end of the day, do you have them in the playoff?
I do, bud. I have them being 10-2. I have them being 10-2 going to the championship game, the conference championship game, and being a playoff team.
I do as well. I'm going to pick them, and I feel like they can win the ACC. You know, 11-1, I think they're in, conference champs or not. 10-2, if they're conference champs, I feel like they're in most likely. Because look, if you look at, take the Oklahoma example, they got to go to Ohio State and play in the horseshoe. Do you think they're going to run the table in the Big 12 and go undefeated there and win the conference championship game too? I don't know. I can almost guarantee you a 10-2 FSU is getting in over 10-2 Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would a 10-2 FSU get in over an 11-1 USC? Probably not. I think that I am going to predict them for the playoff. I don't think the odds are astronomical. In fact, I know for a fact they're not favored to make the playoff in Vegas. I think you get like 3-1 on them making it right now. But I think there's a decent chance they make it, and I like this team a lot.
I think we're similar in our thoughts there as far as liking the team, liking the roster that's been put together, liking how pieces on this roster complement each other. Man, it's a hell of a lot of fun to be able to cheer for a team or to be able to support a team like this and make an emotional investment and look at a roster and and not have to be delusional Miami fans and convince yourself that you're going to incredibly outperform what's actually on your roster there. This is a great team with great pieces and has equipped itself to be one of the better teams in college football. And for that, you know, this season may not play out exactly how we want it to, but when you're a fan of a program and you listen to a podcast like this or listen to the various other pods or radio shows or stuff that have to do with Florida State football and you make that emotional investment, sure is a great place to be when you love a program like this and you're able to look at the roster and actually justify some of the dreams that you may have for what the team could ultimately become.
I mean, this is why, exactly, the baseline performance here, the expectation of another 10-win season, the consistency of program, and Florida State has proven itself to be one of the best programs in the nation, one of, the, I think, three or four best currently. And you know, this is going to be an exciting year, man. We get six really exciting games we get to cover. We get a couple games where I feel like they're going to develop some of the young players. Hopefully they'll have some more blowouts in previous years. I know that's been an issue where they haven't always got guys into the game in order to get them the reps and have left some of the veterans in there maybe a little too long. I'm excited to see it, man, and I'm excited to again cover a program like this.
Bud, let's go ahead and bring that 2017 to us, man. This has been a hell of a lot of fun doing this in the positional previews. Just great for us to be able to enter our eighth year of the podcast. That in and of itself is both awesome and kind of mildly frightening that we would have been able to do something like this for this long. But feel like we've got a great perspective as to where the program's been, have a fantastic series of sources as far as being able to give us an idea as to what's going on currently, the trajectory of the program. And this will be a hell of a season. And I can't remember, certainly part of it's because of what's game one and where it is for me personally, as far as being in Atlanta and who's the opponent. But I don't remember being this excited about a season in a while. And I'm sure I probably feel that way this time of year, every year. But just a fantastic schedule, a challenging schedule, but a roster that gives you the confidence that you're ready to face it.
Yeah, and hopefully a team that learned some lessons from last year. You know, I not to bring up negative things, I was scrolling earlier today and saw the damn promise notes that they had to sign. I don't think this team's going to have to sign promise notes to play hard. I think the mentality will be different. And I think that's going to be a hell of a thing, and I think it'll be a really good year. Let's hope it is.
This concludes this episode of The Knollcast. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Write us at thenollcast@gmail.com or tweet us at Knollcast. Y'all got to stick around. We got two more episodes this week. We got the Bama preview, which is going to be everything you want to know about that matchup. And then we got the instant reaction directly after the game. Bud's going to tell us all about how the Knolls won. Today's date is August 30th, 2017. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.